The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Thursday, that makes it Friday Eve up in here, Dominic. I know it's getting close to the weekend. You got to be getting happier.
Always, Curdy. I'm always happy. I'm always happy.
You're not always happy. You're lying to the people right now.
Only in the case when you're busting my chops a little much. But other than that, I try to have a pleasant demeanor. But, you know, you bring me down sometimes, Curdy. Oh, we got Rich getting broken in on the board with Nate. Thank you, fellas. Of course, our fair audience. Happy Friday Eve to us all.
Dominic, each day I wake up happy, and then somebody goes and screws it up. And I got to tell you.
Usually it's you. Would you open your eyes and realize you're still alive?
You know, that guy in the mirror, sometimes he bugs me.
Right.
And you know what else bugs me? The delay, apparently, in the hush money trial, New York State, the Alvin Bragg. Now, this news was just breaking as I was coming on the air because I start sooner than some. But, Dom, I understand you've got updates. It was actually the Trump lawyers requesting a much bigger delay in the trial. Go figure. And Alvin Bragg, what, acquiescing out of an abundance of caution?
Something like that. Curdy, Maggie Haberman and others reporting at the New York Times. Less than 2 weeks, of course, before we're supposed to start, prosecutors who brought the case proposed a delay of up to 30 days. The Manhattan DA's office, which accused Trump of covering up a sex scandal during and after the 2016 presidential campaign, say the delay would give Mr. Trump's lawyers time to review a new batch of records. The office sought the records more than a year ago, but only recently received them from federal prosecutors who years ago investigated the hush money payments at the center of the case.
What kind of records? You think it's like a Village People double album?
Tens of thousands of pages of records. Trump's lawyers requested that the trial be delayed 90 days. Although the former president frequently requests such delays, prosecutors consenting to any postponement makes one far more likely. Jumping down here in a little bit, in the court filing, District Attorney Alvin Bragg said his prosecutors were prepared to begin the trial on March 25th as planned, but that they did not oppose a 30-day delay out of an abundance of caution and to ensure that defendant has sufficient time to review the new materials.
Does not have cause for appeal is what you mean, sir.
Make it more appeal-proof?
Well, you can't make Donald Trump any more appealing.
Nah, ain't that the truth.
So this one's got me a little flummoxed, Dom. I was hopeful we were finally going to see the slow wheels of justice creep forward, and we're going to see Donald Trump go to trial. The former president, the first former president ever to be held criminally accountable in a court of law, and now we're at least 30 days delayed, it would seem.
Seemingly, Bragg's office sought thousands of records from the Manhattan prosecutors last year, but they had declined to turn them over until recently. Mr. Bragg's office said it expected to receive additional materials next week. Or they're still getting materials. What's up with the Manhattan SDNY, man? We're going to have our friend, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, coming in at 5 o'clock. We'll, I'm sure, dive into some of this. Yes, Crudy, certainly disappointing, but it's hard to argue with Alvin Bragg's position. If the Southern District in New York Manhattan just handed over documents recently, thousands of documents that were asked for over a year ago. It's kind of on them.
Dominic, dizzying and confusing. Legal experts say hush money development left onlookers bemused. Matthew Chapman at the Raw Story, one of my favorite aggregators. A likely delay in the Manhattan hush money prosecution of former President Trump has created an extra cloud of confusion over everything, said former federal prosecutor Elliot Williams to CNN's Brianna Keller on Thursday. But he added the trial is still the most likely of the four to be held prior to the 2024 election. District Attorney Alvin Bragg is charging Trump alleged payments to adult movie actress Stormy Daniels as a felony business fraud in service of an illegal campaign finance scheme, and said he is open to a 30-day delay and the abundance of caution, as you mentioned, Dom, so that Trump's team can review the documents provided by federal prosecutors that could expose new details. That's new criming to be exposed, Dom. So it's just interesting when you look at the cascading effect on the other cases here, said Keeler, suggesting that Bragg's delay could have a knock on delays to the other trials. And how are you expecting it could actually force some, obviously, beyond the election? That's my concern, Dom. And how it could force some out of the spotlight of just people registering what is going on. Because what we do know is that a lot of voters, it doesn't even register for them. Really, what Trump is charged with or accused of doing in many of these trials, they don't even know it, Dom. Now, Williams concurred with Keeler's assessment. It's very dizzying and confusing, I think, to many voters, citizen, whatever else. Crudy, I'm confused. And it's important to note that our elections happen on a timeline. In litigation, prosecutions happen on a totally separate timeline. And it can take sometimes years to bring matters to trial. What's notable here is that this was the prosecution that was probably most likely to happen in the first place, if at all. And so the mere fact of a delay is significant, and that it pushes the inevitable trying of the matter of Donald Trump even further, if not beyond Election Day. But again, all of the prosecutors have asked is for 30 days, and we'll see what the judge does with that. It's not an indefinite postponement of the trial, and the judge hasn't granted it yet. So we'll see what he does.
We'll see.
What if he denied? What if he said, screw you, Trump, go to trial? You got the best criminal defense attorneys. Pay him overtime. Get to work, boys.
Get after it. Given the circumstances, I doubt that would be the case. But then if the judge says that, then they'd have to go to trial. I mean, that's what happens. The 30-day delay, so it puts us, you know, into April, obviously.
April 20th, 420 is a Saturday, ironically, this year.
We're talking about what, maybe a 6-week trial? I mean, this thing can still obviously get done long before this election starts. And out of an abundance of caution, again, my greater question, what was SDNY doing sitting on this document request? Yeah, what?
You mean the federales? Why are they not been more Manhattan, responsive?
The federales, as Crudy said, did not timely turn over those documents. That's frustrating. But I get Bragg's position. I mean, if all of a sudden you get a document dump and you're supposed to go to trial in, you know, less than 2 weeks, you know, you got to have time to look it over. I mean, I get that. 90 days? No, not so much. Alvin Bragg, again, out of abundance of caution, you got to be fair. And if nothing else, remain positive to the fact that when Donald Trump gets convicted of one or many crimes, he will have had afforded every single opportunity from every single angle, from judges and circumstances, friendly judges, not friendly judges.
The benefit of every possible doubt.
The benefit of every possible doubt. And he still will be convicted because he's a criming man.
A criming grifter.
That he is.
You seem so sure, so sanctimonious.
Sanctimonious, man. I mean, look at the facts. What are you talking about?
I'd like to look at them presented as evidence in a court of law. Yes. That's the only way it really matters. I mean, I've known publicly, dude, we've seen the Perry Mason smoking gun, the 11,780 votes, in the Georgia case. We aren't even clear if Fonnie Willis is going to get to try that case. We're supposed to hear today or no later than tomorrow from Judge McAfee in that case, right?
Yes.
We've got this one. It's been delayed. We've got Eileen Cannon, the Trump appointee down in West Palm Beach. Well, apparently they went judge shopping and they caught Eileen Cannon. And Eileen Cannon is considering dismissal arguments in the Trump classified documents case. The most damning from the preponderance of the evidence, the most damning of all the cases, because Trump had all kinds. He obstructed. He told people to hide him, put him in an airplane, put him in the back bathroom, move him from here to there. You know, that's not exactly cooperating with the federal authorities. So there is clear criming there. And the fact that Eileen Cannon might consider a dismissal in this case. Now, the appellate courts would certainly give special counselor Jack Smith a right to bring it back in someone else's court, I strongly suspect. But what are we down to here, dude? We're down to the question of the U.S. Supreme Court right about the time this one's going to trial, right? We'll hear the immunity questions before the U.S. Supreme Court, the oral arguments, which they're in no particular hurry to hear, apparently. They could be moving way quicker than this. And then we got to wait till the end of June for a ruling. And then maybe then you can start scheduling it on Judge Chutkan's calendar.
Yes.
So I was putting a lot of hope and aspiration in this Alvin Bragg trial, Dom. This one could break my heart, dude.
The facts don't change, and perhaps there'll be even more to come out in these documents at 30 days, man. So instead of having it, you know, done in 6 weeks, it'll be 6 weeks plus 30 days.
You're breaking my heart, dude.
Ah, come on, man.
And it was you the whole time, Salvia. You're breaking my heart.
I know. It is. We want to see it go much faster. No question about it. But Eileen Cannon, she's not going to dismiss these things. My understanding, some of the conversations she had with Trump's attorneys today, was not indicative of, yes, I'm going to excuse this case. A 30-day delay, Alvin Braggs, he's got him lined up to get him knocked down. SDNY, well, we'll talk to James Santel about that. He'll have to answer to that. And these other cases, we'll find out. Fonnie Willis, will she be in? Will she be out? Probably in, given the circumstances. She got a few of those charges thrown out. But she has like 6 months to bring him back. Dot the I's, cross the T's, and do it again. Certainly delayed, but not gone, not over, not even close.
The Thursday edition of the Devil's Advocates, that makes it Friday Eve. I need a weekend just to rest up from the weeknight drinking with you, Salvia. We've been keeping Derek Van Orden hours. Partying every night. Rocking every day. Poor Devil's Advocates. Join us, 844-96-PARTY.
Malarkey. The Devil's Advocates invented malarkey.
I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
And we're back on the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Happy Friday Eve. Always love it when you participate in the political party with us on the lines at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, you brought to my attention a proposal by one of our mutual favorites, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from the great state of Vermont. He was my guy in the presidential at least twice. And I find him to be very appealing, very populist with many of his propositions. And he's got a new one, Dom. He brought it to my attention, a 32-hour work week bill. Woo-hoo! What can you tell me about Bernie's bright idea?
Yeah, it's a great idea, Crudy, and I'm down for it. Now, it's a little more than what I prefer.
32 hours a week. You would call that a robust work week. That would be a stretch for you.
The ideal would be 4 hours a day, 4 days a week. But, you know, my lifestyle doesn't allow for that. Maybe I just need to increase my rate. But Bernie Sanders, he introduced a bill to establish a standard four-day work week in the U.S. without any reduction in pay. You hear that, Crudy? The bill, over a four-year period, according to The Hill, would lower the threshold required for overtime pay from 40 hours to 32 hours. So it's not that yet. Couldn't work more than 32 hours, Scrooge, but you got to pay OT if you're going to do it. Further, it would require overtime pay at a rate of 1.5 a worker's regular salaries for workdays longer than 8 hours and would require overtime pay at double a worker's regular salary for workdays longer than 12 hours. The 32-Hour Work Week Act would also protect workers' pay and benefits to ensure there's no loss in pay, according to the press release. Here is a quote from Sanders in the release. Moving to a 32-hour work week with no loss of pay is not a radical idea. It's not a radical idea, Crudy. Today, American workers are over 400% more productive than they were in the 1940s, and yet millions of Americans are working longer hours for lower wages than they were decades ago. That's got to change. The financial gains from the major advancements in artificial intelligence, automation, and new technology must benefit the working class, not just corporate CEOs and wealthy stockholders on Wall Street. It's time to reduce the stress level in our country and allow Americans to enjoy a better quality of life.
If I heard you correctly, and I realize you're speaking on behalf of Bernie Sanders, and I like him a lot more than I like you, Dom, just for the record. But he claimed the American worker is 400% more productive than they were however many years ago, right? And at least there is an acknowledgement that that's really due to the technology. But here's my question. If the owner of the business, and I found myself on this side of the table once or twice, right? Small business owner, got to make payroll. For me, first and the 15th. Others do it every 2 weeks, but I've been a first and the 15th guy for a long time, Dom.
Yeah.
Making that payroll twice a month. And I got to tell you, this would be concerning to me as we've hired a new employee on board the Devil's Advocates World Enterprises here. I mean, I might need Rich to work slightly more than 32 hours a week.
Well, he can. You just got to pay him OT for that, man.
Well, that could get pricey. Then that could come at the expense of your bar tab because, all the business expenses might not fit under the umbrella.
I mean, yes, granted. But let me ask you this. Is overtime over 40 hours a week, is that too onerous for a business owner?
I think it's the set standard, and I think it's going to be hard to roll it back.
When they're set, man. I mean, come on. They're set when they're set. It was the Fair Labor Standard Act, signed into law in 1938, established a 44-hour work week, establishing the first broadly applicable federal standard. 2 years later, the legislation phased in a 40-hour work week that exists today.
That's not enough.
The 1940s. So 44 hours, 40 hours, so in your
not
mind,
enough hours. There should be a greater number of hours worked.
No, but isn't the point to help the benefit, help the working folks, man? You talk about the CEO gap going from, 100, 200, 300 times their employees. I mean, these things, they're taking advantage. They're putting all that in their pocket. Why shouldn't the workers who actually do the work get some of that?
Well, I have no problem if you, as a shrewd business owner, want to reward your employees because you're in a financial position to do so. Well, I think that's good business practice, right? But if it's mandated by the government, Dom, it's an expense to the bottom line. And I got to tell you,
40-hour overtime work week, man.
A lot of people, how do they get around paying the 40-hour overtime? They pay the employee a salary. And suddenly that person's exempt from overtime pay, at least if they make, I believe it's more than $43,000 a year. So I think there are a lot of corporations already doing workarounds on the traditional 40-hour punch-the-clock work week. I don't think the vast majority, maybe I'm wrong, I've never been an hourly employee since like 1984. It's been a long time for me. I'm not used to working on an hourly basis. I know that you do, Dom. I know that many do. And I would say that I feel like Tim Michaels. I'm gonna really walk myself on a plank here.
Lazy Wisconsinites, man.
It's not Wisconsinites. It's society, man. I don't think the average employee.
I don't think the
average employee is busting ass for 40 hours a week. I mean, I've had some really good people that worked for me through the years, and they would bust ass and then they'd get out and work hard, play hard. And I love that sentiment. And I'm a believer in that.
Diminishing returns, man. I mean, you gotta recognize that. And during this announcement, this release, Sanders cited several pilot programs and studies that show productivity improving with a 4-day work week. studies largely found that because workers were happier, they were more productive and were less likely to get burned out.
Happy schmappy.
Beatings won't stop until morale improves, huh? Sanders also pointed to other countries that have already made the move towards shortening work weeks. France has a 35-hour work week and is considering moving to a 32-hour work week. And Norway and Denmark have work weeks of about 37 hours.
What has happened to the American work ethic? I mean, seriously, I'm absolutely being sincere. What has happened to the American
work ethic? Hang on, but these are different questions. One is work ethic. One is compensation. What happened to the American workers getting paid a reasonable rate as compared to the CEOs, man? That's gone out the window. You're going to tell me people don't work hard, man? People work their asses off in this country. One of the reasons he's bringing this is because, as he points out, the stress levels and longer hours.
I have no qualms about sticking it to the Amazons, the Jeff Bezos, the Elon Musks of the world. But what you're presuming there is there's the profitability to sustain this higher cost. And you and I have worked in radio for a long time, Tom. You and I know the margins have been thin sometimes, right? And that may not be feasible under certain pay structures. Wouldn't be feasible.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just telling you, there are times.
Back in 1938 when they went to 40 hours, man. Same exact argument. And we're way more productive now, according to Sanders, 400 times more productive.
Because I want the employees some computers and a nice desk. I don't make them sit in the ditch like you would. If they're more productive, it's because I've invested in their well-being.
Is it? Is that the only reason?
Come back. Tell us. 32-hour work week.
Yes.
I am a workaholic. I am probably the last person that should be making comment, but yeah, I'm going to continue. As a workaholic, I'm going to continue digging this hole on the other side of the break.
Does that mean you drink when you work? I'm not sure what you mean by that, Curdy.
844-967-2789. I can be productive up to, but not to exceed 100 hours a week.
Diminishing returns, man. Come back. We'll be right with you.
Diminishing returns is your nickname.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Thursday, Friday Eve, hardest working radio show in the industry, I would say. Self-assessed.
No question.
Certainly the most humble.
Of course.
Dom, I have been in commission sales or sales management, or I own the company for most of my adult life. I am so far removed from the concept of working for an hourly wage. And I've got to admit, maybe I'm not being sympathetic to the need of the worker, because I got no qualms with the workers doing better. But don't we have a worker shortage right now? Now, let me understand. If I work on a production line, if I'm working at Ford Motor Company, just because you've reduced my hours down to 32 hours, that production line doesn't move faster, can't do my job any faster, right? They're not going to crank out an extra 20% more cars in the same time period, right? So if I've been running 24-hour shifts, I need 25% more labor, and I'm having a hell of a time finding labor right now.
You don't need 25% more labor. Labor's just going to cost you a little bit more.
No, literally. Let me read. I'm actually looking at Industry Week. I'm sourcing this. I'm not just grabbing from ass here. Changing to a shorter week may result in 25% increase in staffing. A 24/7 operation can't shut down, like a 24-hour radio station, for instance.
But he's not. All Bernie Sanders is saying is that instead of above 40 hours, you pay overtime. Above 32 hours, you pay overtime.
Well, is it possible that the employer doesn't want to pay it 1.5 times labor rate over 32 hours and may therefore
1940 as well? And of course it's impossible. Do you think they want to have all the regulation? Do you think they want to have, you know, safety requirements? Do you think they want to have food?
Okay, but let's not go too far in the weeds here, because I'm talking about a specific thing.
This is the exact conversation, man.
Yeah, but of what course, you're telling
anything to provide the workers more will take away from the company's bottom line, right? Well, that's the concern.
That's always been
the concern throughout the entire labor history, Crudy. Has it not?
You're completely dismissing math. Let me throw it at you again. See if you can understand it this time. If you have 32-hour workers, let's say you used to have four shifts a week of 42-hour workers. You need five shifts, right? Because if this is to alleviate the stress on the American worker, if they're supposed to leave the job after 32 hours, not make a higher rate of compensation through overtime, because that's effectively a forced higher labor rate. If you're saying the guy's still going to work 40 hours for me, now I just got to pay him an extra time and a half for 8 hours of that, that doesn't actually alleviate his labor. He's still working 40 hours. Now he's just not doing the job I used to pay him for 40 hours for. So you tell me how that's better from the employer's point of view. One iota. And sure, if you're Amazon, fine, man. But if you're broke-ass radio, you tell me how that works.
Pay the worker more is not going to be better for the employer, Crudy, right? Isn't that your whole
Especially not if I got to hire 25% more employees and give them the additional compensation of health insurance, let's say. Now, what, every 32-hour employee is qualifying for health insurance as well. So I've added that expense onto their labor as well.
Okay.
Well, it used to be a 40-hour employee was qualifying for those benefits. And I hired the guy at 40 hours. But now I'm supposed to give him the same stuff for 32.
30 hours qualifies you for benefits.
Is that a federal thing or is that corporation by corporation?
I believe it's
I'm asking a question.
I believe it's a federal thing.
I'm not sure if you're a reliable source at this point. 844-967-2789. It's not that I got a big problem with the workers. This just seems like an unsustainable mandate on many small businesses. And I know it's the same argument you could make about raising the minimum wage, because this is effectively what you're doing. If you're talking about people still working 40, but getting 8 hours a kicker at a higher rate every week, that didn't alleviate their stress of working a 40-hour work week.
Or do the 32, as mentioned.
But if it's 32, then I got to hire 25% more employees and have 25% more people on health insurance, dude. That's even less sustainable.
If you have a problem, hiring workers, one of the things you can do, based on what I understand to be basic supply and demand, you raise the wage. Amazing how that works. But I get it. It takes away from your quarterly bonuses.
Yeah, that's what I've been living on, or the quarterly dividends. 844-967-2789. Jake from Milwaukee, welcome. What do you got for us, Jake?
Hello, Jake.
Oh, Crute, we knew you were total bourgeoisie. Finally, you're coming out.
Somebody's got to speak on behalf of ownership and management in this conversation. That happens to be me today.
Yeah, Jake, what a rich white guy is going to catch a break in this country.
Yeah, I know. But maybe the Republican Party should, Crute, they're looking for you. Oh, no, wait. You don't hate everyone. That's right. So I'm just going to say on this end that, we as workers, I went to salary after working hourly all my life. But we as workers, we spend more time working than with our families, right?
No. I mean, I would believe
that. Let that sink in for a second. I mean, here they are in Europe being able to enjoy their families and friends. They're actually able to have a relaxing lifestyle for them. Not everybody, but I'm just saying, it is much better system. I, as a worker, I don't want to be forced. I've worked my ass off my whole life and being used beyond what my job description is to do even more work, and that's theft, if you ask me. So I'm not going to shed a tear for you, Crute. I am sorry. I know there's issues. I know there's some small business people who actually do really care, and they do. But as a worker, in American corporation capitalism, you are nothing but a resource and a number. That's all you are. You're not a human being. And, yeah. So let's rise up, Crute. I mean, not Crute. Don, rise up.
The power to the people, Jake.
You can't encourage him to rise up. He'd be rising up against me.
Tar and feather him, man.
Dom, you remember before I was in the radio industry, and I did have a little more money in my account because I had a profitable small business, a brokerage here in Madison, yeah. Wisconsin. And I had a lot of loyalty from my employees, not because I was super cool, although I did know their kids' names. We had bonuses twice a year, June and December. I did regret the summer bonuses. I don't mind throwing in a Christmas bonus, but double bonuses. Damn, that got expensive. And to my perception and the industry standards, we were so much better than the industry in terms of the professionalism of the people I retained. And how do you retain good people? You pay them. You pay them fairly. You give them time off. You're flexible. You try to be a good boss. You know their kids. You buy the Girl Scout cookies. That's the only way I knew how to be a small business owner. But I've also been in small business circumstances, Dom, and you know this because you were there with me, where I couldn't afford as a small business owner to provide health care to my employees. That wasn't a feasibility. Just couldn't carve it out of the net dollars of the corporation. They were not there. It's not that I don't want to be generous with the employees. If the dollars are there, hell yeah, share and share alike. That rising tide should lift the workers. You know damn well I never made 20 times what my employees made. I'd be lucky if I made twice what the lowest paid intern made. So it's not greed. I'm just telling you, in a real world circumstance that I've lived through many times, when margins are tight, what this sounds like is an unaffordable mandate.
And how is that any different from 1940s when the workers are now 400 times more productive than they were then? That same argument from going from 44 hours to 40 hours.
Yeah, but I traded your typewriter in for a computer. Don't I get some credit for that?
Sure, you get a write-off, Jerry. 844. And also it's over $2,500, then you have to depreciate it.
844-967-2789. Brian from McGuanago. Welcome, Brian. What's your thought?
Hi, Brian.
I just got a quick one on this. And sorry, Crute, but you're not going to like it.
Uh-oh.
I'm 50 years old, and my entire working life, I've watched the prices of everything go up except for my wage, which did go up, yeah, from 515 to 715 or 725. And I don't care anymore. I want to see wages go up. I understand small businesses and all that, but at the same time, it's just, yeah.
Brian, do you work with the
scraping by?
Brian, do you work with the sweat of your brow? I mean, do you work laboriously lifting?
I did until I physically couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
I worked until I broke my spine so bad that now I actually have to sit on my butt and still work, and I work from home, luckily.
Brian, what I would say is I would draw a distinction in labor. I mean, that's labor. What I do is not laborious. What I do is, you know, quote unquote brain power or you know, paperwork or paper pushing. That to me is not the same. And I was a commissioned salesman for years and years. And I knew I didn't make a nickel in a given day unless I got out there and got my face in front of customers and sold something. That's the only way I made a nickel. Didn't have any guarantee in a lot of the jobs I had most of my adult life. So I draw a distinction, but I am a different character than many people. The entrepreneur, only 10% would ever want to be an entrepreneur, would ever want to take the risk of not having any money in your bank account at the end of the month. But that is a practical outcome sometimes for small business owners. They just can't afford, you know, one more.
That's an argument in favor of being a wage slave as opposed to an entrepreneur. You get to keep your little scraps and don't have to be as stressed out as the owner. But thanks, guys.
Thank you, Brian. Now,
thanks, Brian.
I take the opposite tack, Brian. I am nearly unemployable. Dom can tell you. I can't get a job. I am so headstrong at this point in my career. I can't work for anyone. What do you think about a civic media? I can't work for anyone. You know, it's because I've been in this position of leadership for so long, either I am the boss or I can't do the job, because the entirety of my work career has been not the sweat of my brow, not in the same way labor works. I mean, I did construction one summer. No freaking way. Those guys work too hard. I don't have the skill. I don't have the aptitude. And I'm lazy relative to that. But I'll work 100 hours a week doing brain work, pushing papers, trying to make great radio with you, Dom. You know I will, because that's what I love to do. But it's not ever been because I was on somebody's time clock. So it's so hard for me, especially in the sales industry, where I've spent most of my career. There are so many freaking lazy sales guys, man. If I got 4 hours a day out of most of those guys, they were the hardest workers on the team.
Well, but isn't that kind of the point? That if, based on the studies that have been done, people are more efficient. People are happier. They have a better work-life balance, man. That's why I think it's hard for people, you know, for companies after COVID to get pull people back into the office. People find a nice balance. They don't
I like it in the office. I want to work in the office.
Told, man. And
I can't sit at home in a recliner and get any work done.
To the caller's point, the wages, we're still at $7.25 minimum wage in the state of Wisconsin. Yeah. And if your business is such that you only can survive if you pay your people $2 an hour, maybe it's not a viable business.
Are we talking about radio still? let's try to sneak
more than just making money off the labors of others.
Let's sneak at least one more in. Mark from the SAC, you've been patient. Welcome, Mark. What's your thought?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, thanks. Because they're talking about this 20-30 years ago, going to 32-hour a week, and how many hours a week now it's going to work out for average for our legislatures who have just ended the session, brought the gavel down here. Not even at the end of March, and they're not going to be around now for.
They're all in it for the per diem, anyways, Mark.
They'll get that anyway. I mean, that's all. When they're going on little group meetings or whatever, they'll collect the per diem for that day and pretend they're
actually
working.
Thumbs up or thumbs down on a 32-hour work week with no loss in pay or benefit?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up, baby.
Thanks, down to you, Mark. See you later. Appreciate your call and your listenership. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Want to hear from you? We'll debate this topic just a bit longer. 32-hour work week. Dom says yes. Crudy says, get to work, you lazy bastards.
The big and tall of political talk. The Devil's Advocates.
Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show. You can join us on the lines 844-967-2789. And stick around, our pal, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, going to join us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour.
Break time's over. Back to work with you, Dominic.
Yeah, that's about it.
Let's get back to the phones. Our fair audience, the hardest working audience in radio. Mike from Milwaukee. Welcome, Mike. What do you got for us?
Hi, Mike. Well, I can't believe I'm actually backing Crude on this one. So
Tell me why I'm right, Mike.
Well, as soon as you said it, I was like, how in the world are we going to run some things like schools? I don't know how you'd run a school unless you just greatly reduce the number of hours you're in school or go down to a 4-day school week or places like hospitals where you're trying to be able to cover 24/7. I have no idea how you'd possibly cover those
25% more staff, probably, Mike, and the accompanying expense of hiring, retention, and benefits.
Yeah, if the people exist, if they're there, I mean, they may not be there even if with those extra benefits.
You mean the actual candidates for the jobs?
Yeah, I'm not too sure if the math works out on all that.
I don't know that we've got 25% slack in the labor force. I thought we were at historic unemployment rates.
Well, that's what I agree. I agree with you. So I really do think that, you know, I'm not too sure where you get the employees to possibly be able to run those institutions if you have to hire that many more people. I don't get that. So I think your average person, I think what's hard in the U.S. is we tend not to get vacations. Or if we have vacations offered to us, you know, then we, you know, lucky if we get them. We're one of the few countries in the world that doesn't have a guaranteed amount of vacation time, paid vacation.
Or family leave or a lot of other things, right, Mike?
Yeah, but that costs
money. I think that's what's hurting. I think that's part of it, Mike. First.
Well, it comes down, but it's also, it comes down to what's compensation, right? That's what it comes down to. It's not just the dollars in your pocket and the wage. It's the benefit package. It's the vacation package. It's the retirement help, those kinds of things. All that goes into the full compensation package.
Yes.
And perhaps, you know, when you're talking about specific hourly workers versus, you know, salaried workers, Bernie Sanders didn't have any quotes specifically on that. So I'll leave it to the hourly thing. Yes. You got to pay more, man. People be getting raked over the coals for decades. Why are we so behind in this wage gap and the wealth gap? Because no one's doing anything to address it. And they can keep you down. They'll keep you down. If they don't have to give you a raise, if they just give you a 2% raise, but inflation is 3%, you're losing on that.
Yeah. How about if we set a baseline standard for the size of the corporation subject to this regulation? Could we compromise? I think the standard for a small business is 500 employees, which to me seems enormous. But could we find a point of compromise and say, you know, the little guy with 5 employees maybe can't sustain this? And if your answer is, well, then you should go out of business, you're going to have a lot of little businesses going out of business. Creative destruction, as Mitt Romney might call it.
But again, I got to ask, if your only ability to remain in business is by suppressing the wage of your workers, is that a viable business model? Or maybe you could be like the super Walmarts and have them subsidized by the safety net system.
Maybe it's the super Walmarts that have made it nearly unsustainable for the Main Street businesses to pay a competitive wage because they don't.
Well, that comes down to the actual purchasers, the buyers buying the product.
Okay, that's all great notion. But in real life, I'm out here trying to pay my little shopkeeper employees so I can sell my wares on State Street in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's getting more expensive every day to keep the doors open. And you're telling me I got to pay them overtime at 32 hours and hire 25% more staff? That's going to be damn expensive. Maybe I close the doors.
Maybe you do.
967. I got the best wares. You love my wares. I make the best widgets, man. You don't want me out of business. You want me just finding a point of equilibrium, of sustainability. 844-967-2789. Doug from Randolph. Welcome, Doug. What do you got for us?
Hi, Doug.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Dom. Hi, Crudy. I lived through the Act 10 issue, and during Act 10, Scott Walker put us back on the federal law for 40 hours. In other words, if you had 8 hours holiday on Monday, and you were called in on a Saturday for 8 hours, you still wouldn't get any more overtime. You had to have boots on the ground 40 hours before your overtime would start. So that's part of this equation also.
When you say boots on the ground, I don't understand the distinction, Doug.
You had to be at work for 40 hours before they would give you overtime, because the holiday pay for an 8-hour day didn't constitute as you being there. So your overtime didn't start.
So like a Memorial Day weekend or whatever, that wouldn't rack towards your 40. So if you had to work the Saturday after Memorial Day, you're effectively not getting the benefit of the day off. You're just accumulating towards 40.
Correct. You had to be there working for 40. And besides, if you'd got the 8 that it used to be for the state before Act 10, then you would get the overtime. After the 8 hours of a holiday, you worked the 32 and then called in Saturday, you would get overtime. But Scott Walker erased that. And secondly, the paycheck stubs changed at that time, where the state of Wisconsin actually put those extra hours that we did work on a holiday week. They actually put them in a separate column in case there was another lawsuit that came back. It would get all straightened out and we would get our overtime pay back again. It was all messed up. And I do agree with it, Crudy. There should be a progressive situation to this, where it's a company over 500 or whatever that has to force to do this. I do believe in getting the small businesses a break. I do. So sorry.
Thank God you agree with me on that point, because I thought you were telling me I echo a Scotty Wanker with my advocacy against the 32-hour work week.
Absolutely. There is not a single soul on this earth I would put in the same rotten barrel that Scott Walker lives in.
Not even Ron DeSantis, because they seem very similar to me.
No, well, well, Scott Walker stole $40,000 in wages and benefits from me for the last 5 years I worked. Mm. So,
yeah. Doug, really appreciate your contribution. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. A lot of you out there got stuff to say, but we got a fine guest coming next. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney. We'll try to come back to this conversation, but we got to talk about the delay in the Trump trial in New York. Catch up with our pal, James Santel, host of the yet is unnamed morning product 9 to 11 on Saturdays. I think they call it morning cannoli, but then it was plural, and now I'm confused. More Devils, the happier happy hour starts right now.